Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we are making old school young again. I'm your host and king of the boneheads, Ryan Howard, and tonight is going to be great fun. I am going to be joined by one of my compatriots from the Basic Experts Gilded server, a place that you guys should know and appreciate by now because it's awesome, one of the best places on the internet. Before we jump on here, I want to remind everyone to like, share, and subscribe if you want more people to know about this. And here at the bottom of the screen, you can see all of my various social media and places where you can find my content. We will be adding Rumble as soon as I have some solo videos to show everyone. And just to remind everyone, we will be launching a Teespring store here in the next couple weeks, maybe even as soon as next week. In fact, why don't we go ahead and say I will launch it next week, and there will be more details on Natural Ones next Monday because I will be going on there as well with the Basic Expert and Victor Gorchev. I am really looking forward to that conversation because I love those guys to death. They are amazing. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on tonight's guest. He is the mind behind Terminal Goblin Games. He is my game master in a Savage Worlds campaign that me and Victor Gorchev are part of. He is the one and only John TGG. John, welcome to Rollin' Bones.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, man.
That's right. And tonight our topic is music and role-playing games and how they interact with each other. How they inspire each other. So I'm looking forward to that. But before we jump into that particular topic, let's begin at the beginning here. John, how did you get into role-playing games?
Oh, man. I was like 12 or 13, way too young to be on forums. And I was on the Fable 2 forum and ended up getting into an MSN messenger group with some of the regulars there. And they were like, oh, dude, have you ever played Dungeons & Dragons? And I was like, no, sounds pretty cool, though. Let's do it. And we ended up playing 4th edition. And, we ran like a month or two long campaign, and that was it. I was addicted from the first hit. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah, and you're, if I'm not mistaken, you're only like a little bit younger than I am. Like less than a year, I think, so... you got into gaming before I did. I never played 4th edition.
Oh, yeah. I am turning 27 next month, so...
Yep.
Not too far behind.
I've been 27 since December, so yeah, like, less than 6 months.
Yeah. So, yeah. Been a good little bit for someone my age.
Absolutely. Now, you know, those of us who dedicate a lot of time to gaming and making content related to gaming, we do so not for the money. It's not a lot of money to be made in this business, but mostly we do so out of love for the hobby. So, you know, that love comes from fond RPG memories. And if you had to pick a fondest RPG memory, what would that be for you?
Oh, man, fondest, probably this campaign that I played in, this Pathfinder campaign, actually, we played for 3 years, and we had a sorcerer in the party, and also I think it was like a witch hunter or something like that, one of those like crazy classes that 3.5 loves to do, and his whole character was he hated magic, so the whole campaign was a back and forth between him and the sorcerer just like fighting each other and stuff. We got implemented or we got arrested for the death of the mayor, which we did kill him, but we didn't tell them that. And we were all like, you know, tied up in the dungeon and shit. And the witch hunter guy managed to get out of his shackles somehow. And the first thing he did was go over to the still shackled sorcerer and started like choking him until the guards came to stop him. And then we had to wait for something else to happen to get us out of there. So he was like, I almost had that son of a bitch. So that was pretty fun. Lots of inner party conflict in that campaign.
Gotcha.
It's either that or the book that caused the cleric to shift out of alignment with his god, because it was a cursed book, and the player replied, "What did I just read? The God Delusion?"
A fedora sprouts in your head. You are now a cleric of atheism.
Yeah. What was even better was he was a cleric of Aristil, which I think is a canonical Pathfinder god, but it is the god of farming. So we always joke that he said, you know what? Fuck farming. we're hunter-gatherers now.
Cool. So to dive in a little bit to, you know, this topic at hand here, music and role-playing, it's something I don't think a lot of people think about those two particular topics mixing together, but they really are, you know, for those of us who love music and love role-playing, you can't help but feel kind of inspiration from one to the other. So when it comes to like your favorite genres of music, the genres that you keep coming back to, what are, say, like three or four that you really enjoy?
Oh man, definitely progressive rock. Stuff like Rush, Coheed and Cambria, The Deer Hunter, All that stuff is awesome. I mean, you know, not only do they tackle like, they tell stories and stuff with their lyrics and stuff, but also just like the wide range of emotion, because that's the core for me. Is, you know, it doesn't matter if what you're feeling coincides with what the song is, you know, talking about or trying to do, but it's all about getting those creative juices flowing. So, you know, prog rock, I'm a really big fan of metal music. You know, mainly kind of still on the technical side, stuff like Protest the Hero. I really like punk music. A lot of, especially the more like melodic stuff. So stuff like Rise Against. I just had it in my head and I totally blanked. So I'll move on. Whatever you call Sting and the Police, love Sting. Like probably one of my top five musicians ever. It's awesome. It's that mix of like weird mix of like reggae and punk with the Police, and then like the orchestral stuff. And him, kind of comes back to the story thing, coming from a point in time to where you'll have a bunch of different little stories on the albums. Like, I didn't know the song I Hung My Head was by Sting originally. I thought that was a Johnny Cash song. So, you got prog metal, really big fan of pop music, too.
Gotcha.
But, being catchy is huge for me. You know, love to sing along, stuff like that. Big fan of Dua Lipa. She was in my top five Spotify this year. Really out of nowhere. It was like Coheed and Cambria, Dua Lipa, Steely Dan, Deer Hunter, and Sting.
Oh god. That's an odd mix.
Yeah.
No, for me, I mean, I'm right there with you as far as prog rock goes. I used to have an entire podcast that was dedicated to Rush called Digital Men. And I spent many, many years very deep in Rush's catalog. Only got to see him live once. I saw him on R40. And they were huge for me. Crafty in chat here mentioning some bands that I like here, especially Dream Theater. That's another band that I spent a lot of time in their discography.
Octavarium. God, so good.
Scenes from Memory also. Man, that scene, I'm just going to like take a pause here. Scenes from a Memory, Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from a Memory. That album is one of the few experiences where I listened to the whole album front to back and then just had to take like 15 minutes of quiet to completely like take everything in.
Oh man, I love it when that happens. Mm-hmm. That happened to me at the Between the Beard and Me, the Parallax albums. Mm-hmm. Once I finished, I was like, what just happened? What did they just do to me?
Yeah, like prog rock and really just like rock in general. I'm a really big fan of most subgenres of rock, especially like 70s and 80s stuff. I really like country music as well. I'm a big country music fan, which, I mean, people's mileage may vary with that. I make no apology for it. I really enjoy the storytelling aspect of country, the musicianship, the influences. It's part of my heritage. It's part of my culture. I live in Nashville. I like country music.
It kind of comes with the territory, right?
Yeah.
When I was younger, I didn't have too high of an opinion of the guys who were, you know, playing at the time. But definitely as I've gotten older, I definitely see more of the appeal. Mm-hmm. And really like it. Johnny Cash, all-time greatest musicians. You know, they may not have had like an 8-octave range like Matt Bellamy from Muse or whatever, but damn, he hits it so well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Alan Jackson, also fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, I like pop as well. The pop that I enjoy, I feel like comes more out of the 80s. I think that's kind of the period of pop that I really like, specifically like, you know, big 80s hits. I like Whitney Houston. I like Michael Jackson from his peak period. I like a lot of that stuff. Anything that has kind of that grandiose sound of the 80s, I think is really, really cool. Especially, I really like both Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel to bring things a little bit back into the prog sphere. I like what both of them ended up doing with their solo careers and with Genesis. So there's that.
I am unfortunately not as well versed with those guys as I probably should be. I mean, you know, In the Air Tonight, classic. Mm.
Absolutely. Yep.
I will say I do miss what I did like about the 80s and pop music is everyone was doing like just trying so many different stuff. Like, you know, you had Prince out here who was very different than like Michael Jackson. And I think Prince was 80s, right? That sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing about Prince. He qualifies for like 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s, I'm pretty sure. He released music for a very long period of time.
I think he was very, he kind of embodies the holding back for the sake of the song thing. Because mm-hmm. I remember seeing his guitar solo at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, being like, you know, holy crap. Like, you know, he knew he was a good guitar player, but Jesus, he just wiped the floor with everybody else there.
Mm-hmm.
Got Tom Petty in the back laughing because he's just like, yep, I just got blown away.
Yep. Now, another thing to kind of establish our music backgrounds here, if you had to pick a handful of currently active artists, so artists who, you know, have released music within the past 5 years, who would those be for you?
Oh man. Definitely Coheed and Cambria. Only band I currently have a tattoo of. Yeah. Coheed, the Deer Hunter, which is, if you've not listened to the Deer Hunter and you want to see like a crazy ass transition from like post-hardcore with story elements to like Grand Ois orchestral stuff. Listen to the Axe albums. They're so cool. Let's see. Deer Hunter, Coheed and Cambria. Closure in Moscow. They actually just released a new single for the first time in like 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Their Pink Lemonade album is so dope. Absolutely recommend if you've not listened to them. It's like funk, prog funk. I don't know how to describe it. It's a trip.
Gotcha.
Dua Lipa, because I haven't gushed enough about Dua Lipa. This is the official Dua Lipa simp screen now.
You're going to have to carry the weight on that one, because I've heard songs by Dua Lipa. The only one that like I could name, if you held a gun to my head and said name a Dua Lipa song, I rules is the only one that I could name, but
I mean, won't be hard to carry if she is very small, it seems. Who else? Past couple years, I've just been kind of hitting up old favorites, and like if they release new stuff, I listen to it. I think Heart Attack Man, I didn't like their latest album, but Fake Blood, I believe the name of the song is, or the name of the album is. Yeah, Fake Blood is such a fantastic, like, emo pop punk kind of album that still still remains to be edgy in a genre devoid of edge. And just super good songwriting, super good performances from everyone. They got a gimmick. If you're into that sort of thing, they always wear their own merch, like head to toe. It's kind of funny.
Nice.
Always introduce themselves as "I'm X from Heart Attack Man," no matter what.
I like that. So yeah,
Coheed, Deer Hunter, Closure in Moscow, Dua Lipa, and Heart Attack Man. By the way, they're named after a Beastie Boys punk song, which is fantastic. If you've not heard the Beastie Boys like punk stuff, it's great.
Yeah, I feel like the Beasties are a lot more complicated than people give them credit for. There's a lot kind of beneath the surface when it comes to a lot of their music. So for anyone who like just kind of puts them in the fight for your right to party box, I think it would do you some good to listen to some of their other stuff as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now for me, my current favorite active artists, Volbeat is a big one. I mentioned them on the show here a few weeks ago, but they are a kind of sort of metal, mostly rock with a little bit of a rockabilly sensibility to them, which is funny because they're from Denmark. But sound so well, and they're so consistent with their songs. They really are just like a fantastic band.
I think the only song I've heard of theirs is Heaven or Hell, and maybe one more about like a Western outlaw dude that I don't remember the name of.
Was it Doc Holliday?
It may be.
I love Westerns, so that album, Outlaw Gentlemen and Shady Ladies, that has the song Doc Holliday on it, that is a fantastic album. But yeah, Heaven or Hell is a great song. Shotgun Blues, if you want to listen to like one of their more recent hits, that's a fantastic song.
I definitely need to listen to some more of them because I like Heaven or Hell.
And then one of my other favorites, and yeah, some people may immediately tune out of the stream as soon as I say this, but I really do like Ghost.
I could never get super into Ghost. Like I saw like pictures of them, and I saw like the alt girls in college, like the ones with like the side shaved mullets and shit wearing like shirts of them. And I was like, all right, I'm intrigued. So I went and listened to them and was disappointed because I got what to me sounded like a mixture of like Nickelback with better vocals.
Oh God. Oh, that hurts. Like, that hurts to hear.
Maybe it was like the wrong song or something. It was something with a rumble, like, can you hear the rumble? It's my ghost impression. And then I got a buddy who's super into him. Ghost is a new Alice Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's completely fair. Ghost, like, having seen Alice Cooper live, and I'm going to go see Ghost live here in August. I very much get that same vibe from them, because I love, I really love what Alice Cooper does, and I love the theatricality and really the commitment to the bit of Ghost. I will say, with Ghost, for anyone who hasn't listened to them, if you see pictures of them before you listen to them, you may have the impression that they're heavier than they actually are. They're not that heavy. They really aren't. But
yeah, I was expecting like black metal or something.
Mm-hmm. But like Tobias Forge just described them as, I think it was on Eddie Trunk's show, he called them a devil worshiping Kansas, which I thought was perfect.
Oh man, that's great.
Crafty again points out a good point here. It really is. It's like it's 70s shock rock, but with kind of a modern sensibility to it. It honestly, like as far as theatrical music goes, they're the only people doing it that it's not making me scratch my head. Like I'm willing to buy into the bit with them. And I'm saying this as like a very religious person who also listens to this band that's like, our front man's a satanic pope.
Is it, it's like the, God, that made me think of this Christian black metal band, which is actually pretty good. God, the song is called Murder, Impending Doom. That's the band.
Gotcha. I have not heard of them. I've heard of other like Christian hardcore and Christian black metal bands, but I've not heard of that specific band.
The song Murder by Impending Doom, it's pretty good if you're into black metal. It's got the blast beats and it's got the scratch, like the scratchy like vocals and all that.
Gotcha.
Not a genre I'm super well versed in, except for the absolute banana story of mayhem, Varg and all that, which is kind of relevant to the stream.
Victor Gorchev, stop young-splaining music. I will young-splain music all I want, Victor. And then Crafty with the timely reference, Christian Mudcore.
Yeah, you know, you...
I mean, Crafty, you've heard how religious all of the like mudcore people are, for the most part. So, I mean, does that really surprise you?
Only true tradcats can play mudcore.
Absolutely, yes, yes. Tradcats and Orthodox. And then I guess to kind of round out my favorite active bands and artists right now, Hailstorm is up there for me as well. I'm a big fan of Hailstorm.
I've actually not listened to very much Hailstorm. I know of them.
Mm-hmm. I saw them live opening for Alice Cooper 3 years ago, and I also, on the same show, saw Motionless and White for the first time, and I was not expecting to like Motionless and White, but I really did. And then I really enjoyed Hailstorm as well. If you're going to listen to like one song to get you hooked, I would say Black Vultures from not the most recent album, but one album ago. I think the album is called Vicious. Song Black Vultures is really, really good.
All right, I got that in my notes here to give it a listen tomorrow. Hellstorm was always, and this is going to be a really strange connection, but it's just one that I've made. They're always kind of like Opeth for me. Toward that, they were always around, and I was always like, okay, you know, that's a pretty big band. And then I just never got around to actually sitting down and listening.
I look, I'm the same way with Opeth. I've got tons of friends who are huge Opeth fans. I've never listened to any Opeth, so.
I've always heard snippets, and my my biggest metalhead friend, who's sort of into prog but sort of not, he described them as their songs go between absolute bangers and TV static. That same friend has a really fun story about Coheed and Cambria. He had never listened to them, and his friend was like, "Hey, come to this concert with me." And he took him to one of the first Neverender tours, to where they played an entire album front to back. He was like, they played for like 9 hours straight, man. I was like, when do I get to go home?
So I'll tell you, my first Coheed and Cambria experience was at the end of summer weenie roast in, this would have been 2011, maybe 2012. And I was there to see Flogging Molly specifically.
Oh, dude. That's
but I got awesome. I got there early, and you know, we caught Switchfoot because it was me and another friend. We went to Christian school, so yeah, we're going to listen to Switchfoot set. But between Switchfoot and Flogging Molly, Coheed and Cambria played.
What a weird concert does this sound like?
Yeah, I mean, it was put on by... is it 106.5 The End in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is like the active rock station. There were all kinds of just like weird bands there. I don't remember who all was there, but Coheed and Cambria played right between Switchfoot and Flogging Molly. I'd never heard them before. I was like 16, I think. And it was like, it was an experience because I just see these two dudes with crazy hair get on stage. I'm just like, I've never heard of this band. Let's listen to this. And I was just like, oh, this is awesome.
Right? So I remember, because like one of the first songs I heard was Welcome Home, because it was on like Rock Band and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking up the music video, and like the top comment on YouTube at the time was like, how does this man look like Frankenstein but sound like Hannah Montana? I think that was 2011, 2012 was probably about when I got into them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Got real big into the Good Apollo album because, you know, teenager, breaking up with the girlfriend, the big angsty album. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So Viktor Gorchev is a good example of his people.
Oh, Arion, Matt, yes. Dude, Arion is absolutely insane.
I have not listened to Arion, but it sounds like I should give them a listen.
Dude, they have Matt talks about as many as 10 singers in one song.
Mm-hmm.
So he like composes all the music. I don't know if he plays all of it, but he definitely composes it. And he has different vocalists do different characters. And there's a song called Everybody Dies, and it has Tommy from Between the Buried and Me. Hmm. And he's so good. I remember I actually saw Between the Buried and Me touring with the Deer Hunter. And when the Deer Hunter like finished their set, because they were the opener, everybody that was like me, like, you know, normal size, like hipstery dudes, left. All that was left that came in to like fill up the mosh pit and stuff was these like 6'6", 280-pound Viking looking dudes. Now, I'm not a small man. I'm 6 foot tall, like 230 pounds. And I was like, holy shit, these dudes are Vikings. And during the set, they were, you know, doing the mosh pit and thing, and I could hear bodies slapping over the music in this small hall in Orlando.
Oh, God.
And it sounded like people were throwing full honey hams at the wall, just meaty smacks. It's terrifying.
Oh, that sounds like a great time. I need to check out this band. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, they're all great. You mentioned Switchfoot. I also attended a bunch of Christian concerts and stuff, and I have seen the Newsboys like 18 times because they kept always opening for other bands I wanted to see.
So Crafty's description of Arion here. People think Arion is weird, too weird, but give it a good listen. You'll start to appreciate what's going on. It's opera, not really music. That's how I describe, and again, people, don't crucify me for this. I'm a huge Meatloaf fan. That's how I describe Meatloaf to people. So if it's like that, then I'll probably enjoy it.
You might. I'm not super familiar with Meatloaf except for a Bat Out of Hell. But if you're in, you said you were into listening to front to back, Arion definitely hit you there.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm walking away from this with a new band to listen to. That sounds great.
I'd also heavily recommend the Deer Hunter. All of their The Axe series is just the concept, and it's like a Coheed where it just continues stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They have some other concepts in there, like their like the Ring album was the last one. It's like some sort of like weird future thing to where like society's in like physical rings, and it goes from the top of like the poorest one to the richest one. Super interesting stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, you were not the first person to recommend the Deer Hunter to me, so I need to definitely give them a shot as well. But no, as far as like where music and RPGs meet, just to kind of begin that side of the conversation here, when you are setting out to GM a game or even play in a game, do you include like listening to music as part of your preparation?
I actually don't. I have what I do for like focused like prep. Like, I'm running a cyberpunk game each Sunday right now, so I'm reading a bunch of cyberpunk novels. Music is more random with me. Like, sometimes I will listen to a song just randomly, and just kind of something will, like, pop into my head. And it could be a song I've listened to, like, 1,000 times, but just the combination of mood and just being into it that particular day just has things just fire off neurons, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if I'm like thinking of like thinking about songs for some reason, like I don't even have to be listening to it. Like a lyric could just pop in my head and I'd be like, oh man, this is making me think of like X. Song has nothing to do with X. The song's about a dude breaking up with his girlfriend. But man, this would make a cool, cool song, or, you know, a cool adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because I listen to a lot of prog rock, I think about how certain prog songs would fit into like a role-playing format. I've thought a million times about turning 2112 into an adventure, but that just seems a little too on the nose.
Now, I was going to say do it backwards, but I quickly realized that.
But no, I mean, like Crafty in earlier mentioned cyberpunk games, and you mentioned cyberpunk as well. He says he listens to White Bat, Daniel Deluxe, Carpenter Brut. Personally, this is just weird, like where my mind goes. But I've been listening to the audiobook for Hardwired recently, and I've also been trying to come up with what Victor and I were talking about on his his last appearance on this show, Southern Cyberpunk. So in like preparation for putting myself in a cyberpunk mood, I've been listening to a lot of very old country music.
Okay. I can see it. It definitely hits like the low life thing. Cause that's, you know, that's like the archetype or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Southern cyberpunk, yeah, bayou punk.
Yeah, I mean, like, bayou punk is part of it. It's part, like, neon cowboys. It's part the South will rise again, like cyber confederates almost. I came up with an AI that has convinced itself that it's Elvis trapped in the Matrix. There's all kinds of weirdness going on in the Southern cyberpunk that I'm putting together. And, you know, as Victor said here, he expects it on his desk in the morning after he writes the 2D8 system.
I could definitely see that. And Hardwired is fantastic for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hardwired, I also read it recently as well. And man, it's like, it's the exact cyberpunk that I always had in my head. I've never been a fan of like all the full Borg kind of stuff. And while I love Ghost in the Shell, it doesn't really hit my imagination that hard.
Mm-hmm.
But Hardwired was perfect because everyone was cybered up, but it was only things pertinent to their job or what they do.
Yeah.
So I thought that was super cool. And it has, well, you know, main character's cowboy. He mm-hmm. was a rancher at first, so it fits that perfectly.
Mm-hmm. And I this is probably just me and my like country nerdness, but every time the book mentions a steel guitar was playing in the distance, which is like a common refrain throughout the book, whenever the perspective is on cowboy, I put specific songs in there that he would be listening to at that moment or that he would be thinking of at that moment.
Get some good old Hank in there.
Yeah. I mean, like while he's driving his Panzer very early on, I put like Wabash Cannonball by Roy Acuff in there. There's all kinds of great songs that kind of fit that motif of what's going on in that game.
It's got a highwayman going on as he's driving over Missouri.
Yeah. And Crafty mentions something where he puts, he knows some referees put together specific playlists for specific scenes. I put together playlists for characters, and the most recent time that I did this was when I was doing a Deadlands live stream. I put together a playlist for kind of the world of Deadlands in general, so it was like a weird mix of alt country and prog metal and stuff like that. But also, I put together like a private playlist that I didn't share with anyone for my character, consisting of either period appropriate songs or like thematically appropriate songs that Clayton McTaggart would have listened to or grown up listening to in 1886.
I've definitely heard of other people doing that for sure. To Matt's specific scenes, I kind of do like it's kind of video gamey. I mean, you saw it in the Savage Worlds game. I'll have like chill mm-hmm. music for like background stuff, and then when combat kicks in, I'll throw on the battle playlist or whatever.
Mm-hmm. The Crafty also mentioned something that I wanted to ask you about. I've been in several situations where GMs have played music at the table, and it's been, I would say, too much, to the point where it's actually put me off of using music at my own table. What are your thoughts on that specific practice?
So that specifically, I don't use music in my in IRL games, only online games. And with the caveat that I always allow the people to mix it on their end so they could lower or raise it as much as they want to be comfortable. Because I always think it should add and not take away. And with the way that I personally do music, you know, I don't want to be on my phone like, oh, hold on, guys, the internet's lagging out, the song's going bad, let me get this specific song. That kind of, you know, that takes me out of the moment. I know it takes the players out of the moment, and that'll also, you know, prompt them to bring out their phones or whatever, because that's what we do when we're bored for 2 seconds nowadays. So, you know, that's how I do it personally. I'll occasionally do something to like set the mood if in real life. Like when we played when we first played Cyberpunk Red, had some like blacklight LEDs in going on. We did that for like 10 minutes and then I realized I couldn't read the dice. So that didn't last too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Crafty, for anyone who is looking to play music at their table, Crafty has a good tip here. Basically build a playlist or use an album. Don't mess around with it. Put speaker behind you. And that, I mean, that's specifically at the end there. That's a good tip. If it's too loud for you, like if you're thinking, hey, this is a little bit loud, then it's definitely too loud for your players.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a really good tip. Something that I wish I'd have thought about, honestly. And also with real life, at least for me specifically, it doesn't really come through in the mic, I don't think, but I talk pretty low volume. So like by the time I adjust the music to be at a level to where they could hear me clearly, it'd be like, why are we playing it?
Hmm. Well, my whole thing, like I'm one of those GMs who likes to do voices for characters. So if I have committed to a voice that's hard for me to project with, if there's some other noise competing with my voice that I've assigned a character, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. I'm very bad with accents. My fiance makes fun of me all the time. I was doing like an impression of my dad the other day, and she was like, why do you sound like Dracula?
I am good at some like very... I'm good at a very narrow range of impressions. I can't do just like any voice whatsoever, but there are some voices that I can do all right. So there's a lot of British, Irish, and Scottish people in my games.
Oh man, the voice she hates the most is my 40K orc voice, because I'm playing in a Savage Worlds game, and she's like, God, I hate it. All I can hear in the other room is you going, oi, Zorgan, get. Come in there, rip your mic out.
I really annoyed the crap out of my wife with this voice. I called him the slow Ninja Turtle Rembrandt. And it's basically just like the slowest voice that I could possibly conjure. I would do it right now, but I'm afraid she'll kick in the door and like try to kill me on stream if I start this up.
Cuts the internet cable.
But yeah, I mean, it literally, I've used it on the phone with scam callers before. I understand why people hate it, but it's really fun to do.
It's the same with me and Stone Cold impression.
Give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. My Stone Cold bleeds into like my old man. So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah. I love doing wrestler impressions, too.
Oh, yeah, dude, Brother Jack.
Listen, baby. You put my family through hard times, Ric Flair.
Roll a string of natural ones. That's a hard times, daddy. Now, that could be a show on its own, wrestling and RPG.
Absolutely. That definitely could be a show on its own. But when it comes to like specific songs that have inspired you, you made like a cool playlist. And so I want to give you a chance to share that with everyone here. I'll drop a link because you actually did take the time to make a YouTube playlist here. But just, you know, take us through these songs kind of one by one and tell us, you know, what specifically about these songs inspired your games.
Okay. So it starts off with the Coheed and Cambria song, The Crowing. If you've never listened to it, there's during the last part of the song, kind of where a bridge would usually be, the song kind of like kicks up in like BPM. They just go crazy playing what I can only describe as like 30-second notes. It's so insane. And just like listening to it gets me hype every time. If I'm driving, I'm increasing like by 20 miles an hour, hitting the gas. I'm like, hell yeah. Dun, 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 dun. And I'm super into the Coheed concept, which if you don't know, all of their albums except one follow like a story. And I always love the ending bridge gang vocal part. The song is about a alien called a prize named Ambolina being assigned to the main character to watch over him and protect them. And it always like gave me visions of like different things because it's such a cool line. And the lyrics here, I have a Google sheet too. We can go ahead and share that too because it's public.
Gotcha.
Like the specific lyrics, which got me going here. I should have put more from the Crowing because that shit's awesome. Just in general. But just like hearing like just the tempo change and just everything else, like with the song, it just hits me directly in the creativity. Like, oh, I need to do something with this right now. In that Google Doc as well, for those watching, after the lyrics, I have what I came up with. And some of these I've used in games, some I haven't yet.
Just to, like, for everyone's edification, I'm going to go ahead and share the specific Google Doc just so we can all see it. So let me go ahead and get this set up here. There we go.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's probably been way better. But yeah, and it's like really anything vague, it seems, will kick it off for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think I have two instances of like dream stuff in here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so under that Dua Lipa song, the lines, "All I see is you, wide awake and in my dreams, I see your face so vividly."
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mind always defaults to horrible shit when I hear vagueness.
there really is something about just like when you leave things open to interpretation, just the disturbing angles your mind immediately goes to.
Yeah, absolutely. And with me, it's only really effective with music. Like, I'm also a big horror movie fan. And one of my major complaints of the last 10 years is that no one wants to show me a monster. They want to tell me that, like, you know, oh, your mind is the biggest scary thing. Like, yes, I know that, but I also want to see, you know, King Kong.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder, like, with horror movies, I know, like, you know, there's nothing scarier than what you don't see, than, you know, what your imagination is conjuring in the shadows in the dark. But also, like, are you being a little bit lazy?
Exactly. Like, this is a visual medium.
Yeah.
You know, like, sure, in a book or something, I could see that because I'm not actually seeing anything anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, movies are a visual medium. Show me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So to do a loop one, the Steely Dan one. I love, if you've not listened to Dirty Work by Steely Dan, go listen to it. It's such a great song.
Mm-hmm.
And I always loved this this particular line in the second verse, yeah, right before the chorus. And there's something about like seeing something bad that's going to happen and then just resolving to not do anything. I'm sure everyone has done that in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've been like, well, I've been in situations where I'm like, okay, well, I should probably do X to prevent Y. But also I don't want to. I'm too lazy. So I'll just let Y happen and deal with it then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've had several situations where, to quote Letterkenny, I've said, "Not my pig, not my farm."
It, exactly. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I also coming, I guess for me as well, with music, I was always a really big fan of like the more like emo stuff. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily like MCR and stuff like that, although they do have a couple of songs that I like. I really like the introspective, self-aware stuff. Like Love Brand New.
Mm-hmm.
Brand New is awesome, especially Science Fiction. That album is great. I really like some Rise Against song. I like Rise Against in general,
mm-hmm.
but they're more like introspective kind of stuff is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to watch Letterkenny. I see people reference it all the time.
Letterkenny is, it's one of those few shows where like from the first scene, I was just like, okay, this is amazing.
Instant hook.
Yeah. Because the first scene, you're immediately introduced to, like, this is what the show's all about. Because your main characters are sitting outside, you know, just chilling on Wayne's farm. And then the hockey players pull up and they immediately start jawing at each other. And you just get, like, the whole selling point of the show right off the bat. And it's immediately, like, if you're in at that point, you're in. And if you're not, then I'm sorry, it's just not going to be for you.
And there's no giving it three episodes or whatever. It's
right,
right,
yeah,
from the start.
I admire any show that's willing to just be like upfront with what it's all about.
Oh man, is it? I recently watched The Watcher. I don't know if you've seen it or like heard of it or whatever.
I don't know that I have.
Okay, it's like a thriller suspense show or whatever. Starts off with a great concept, and then I have never immediately felt like an idiot after finishing a show like I did with The Watcher. I was immediately like, I have wasted 8 hours because I was super into it. I wanted to know what was going on,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm paranoid, and the thought of like having to deal with someone like breaking into my house or like watching me and stuff.
Yeah,
it would justify so much, but so like it hooked me, as in like, okay, this is, I'm usually not the kind of guy who's like, oh, if I was in this situation, I would do this. Like, I'm not really kind of like that with shows and stuff, but this show kind of got me to do that. And then when it was all said and done, I was like, this was such a huge waste of my time. I have been cucked by a show. Awful. Don't watch it. Don't waste your time. The actual true crime case it was very, very loosely based on,
mm-hmm.
Was way more interesting.
Gotcha.
But then, anyways, back to the doc here. Yeah, Steely Dan, definitely good. I heard someone once describe Steely Dan as like a mood or an aesthetic.
Yeah.
I would completely agree. Like, if you can get into like the kind of groovy kind of like seediness, then Steely Dan will hit you hard.
Mm-hmm. Here's my thing with Steely Dan. I like a lot of their songs. I really don't like the song Hey 19. And I hear that's like the song that every classic rock radio station plays, with the exception of like Reelin' in the Years, which I do like Reelin' in the Years, but I hate Hey 19.
I can't even think of what that one sounds like off the top of my head. I really like Reelin' in the Years.
Mm-hmm.
Do It Again is a good one.
Yep.
God, what's the Bad Sneakers? Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. FM's great.
Yep. Pretzel Logic, super good. Is Pretzel Logic the one that has like 19 chord changes in a verse? It's like, I remember hearing it and I was like, what in the world is going on here? Why do I like it? Actually, you don't want to make another? A band with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers would definitely have a couple of these if I'd have sat down and like listened to more and thought about it.
Oh, yeah.
you know, kind of coming to the last one that I managed to write down here, Mandroid Echo Star. Mm-hmm. If you listened to Coheed and thought, man, I wish this were heavier, then Mandroid is what you were into.
Mm-hmm.
This one in particular, it's just, it's got that vagueness and stuff. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what the concept is or what the song is about, but it conjured up some pretty cool things. Mainly it's talking about a dude, like, seems to be looking for some chick.
Mm-hmm.
And some, like, kind of abandoned town or something. So I was like, oh, well, that would be cool. You know, what if this piece here about dreaming and seeing her face and stuff was inscribed on a statue, and it's like requesting something. Mm-hmm. And players being players, they'll be like, oh, a golden statue, you know, it's a jacket. That causes a bunch of whites to come out, all holding 50 feet of rope, ready to hang them from a tall tree.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that would be dope. That sounds like an awesome time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of difficult to put to words, like, the actual creative process, I guess. At least for me. I know, like, but I put stuff out intermittently. I don't do it for a living. So maybe there is some sort of process to help people do it consistently. But I know for me, I'll have periods of not doing very much creatively, and then I'll bust out a lot in like a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's kind of where I am right now. I'm trying to get to where I'm more consistent. I'm pushing myself to be more consistent. But yeah, I feel like I'm right there with you.
It's super hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I've even fell out of my own schedule. I was like, okay, I'll release a video a month and a couple blog posts each month. And missed February entirely. It's hard, man. Especially, you know, hard for people who have, like, kids and shit. Like, I just got a job and a fiance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would be lying if I said my newborn didn't have any kind of effect on that. But no, I mean, for me, one of the artists that I consistently go back to, and this is going to be very on the nose, but I'm going to talk about this for a little while here. The artist that consistently inspires my gaming, I would say, is Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I know, like, that's a super obvious pull. He sings a lot about magic and wizards and you know, fantasy stuff. But it's not just the subject matter of the lyrics. It's the manner in which Ronnie James Dio sings about that stuff.
Yes, absolutely agreed. You know, it's about how it makes you feel and how you think you can transfer that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, the things you relate the most to are things that, you know, resonate with you at some level emotionally. Even if it's just, oh, I think this is super cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to try to transfer that to your players when you're playing. So when your players come across these things that you have, you know, put together, there's nothing better as a DM than, in my opinion, than hearing, oh, you know, we had a lot of fun. Actually, the only thing better than hearing we had a lot of fun is hearing your players talk about the session without you, like opening up the group chat or whatever, or just, like, you know, hanging out with them and they bring something up. Like, that is what a GM should strive for. Like, oh, man, you remember that time that, you know, we did this? Or, oh, when that happened?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're not, like, how would I put this? I think that's a great thing and what you should strive for. If it's not the only thing you're aiming for, I guess it's like because you know there's a lot of angry people on Twitter who are, you know, we talk about them where it's like, oh, well, you know, just give the players what they want, that way they're like, oh, that was fun. It's I kind of want something deeper than that, like deeper than just the oh yeah, you know, my player did, my character did a ridiculous thing, you know.
Yeah, for me, the key to that is it's not in the immediate, like, it's not immediately what your players think they want. It's not, you know, just kind of catering to their whims. It's more as things build, as you consistently build a good game, a good structure, a solid foundation, your players arrive naturally at the conclusion at the end of the game that you've taken them on a hell of a ride. Like, you have built a consistent structure with ups and downs and twists and turns where maybe, you know, some characters died. Characters didn't get what they thought they were going to get, or, you know, certain things happen, complications take place. But by the end of the session, they just go, like, naturally, wow. Because they experienced what it was like to essentially be, like, first person inside a fantasy novel.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like the Savage Worlds game, like, after that last session, which I'm excited to play on Thursday, by the way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. After that session, we were all like, oh, dude, that was so cool. Like, that was awesome. That was like 10 out of 10.
Definitely. Yeah.
Or like seeing a player get super into their character, like not in a theater kid, like, kind of way, to where it's like, oh, they come dressed up, you know, they do the voice and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had anyone try to dress up. That would be confusing.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone dress up either. I mean, like, I do character voices for my characters, but that's about the extent of it.
My cyberpunk game on Sunday, I have a player who's playing a dude who was, like, experimented on as, like, a kid by Biotechnica.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, you know, it's cool. I'll write that down for if Biotechnica shows up. And I was super surprised because usually he's not, like, he's kind of the kind of guy who's like, oh, I'm playing myself in, you know, fantasy realm.
Mm-hmm.
But they ended up capturing someone and they wanted to get information out of him. And the usual dude who would do that kind of thing is like, here, you take care of him because I'll be too mean to him. And he was like, are you sure? First guy was like, well, yeah, I'm just going to kick him in the head. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay. So then he drug him and just interrogated him in a gas station bathroom. And everyone was like, what is going on? How did we end up here?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was like super into it, super disturbed at what was going on. But
yep.
Like, that sort of thing is awesome. And it's something that you really can't get out of anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what video game is going to let you do that and have, you know, all of the options available to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean,
good.
I've played a couple of video games where at the end I was just like, man, that was a lot of fun. Or, you know, I really enjoyed that story, but I've never experienced something like role playing where at the end I was so emotionally invested in what happened. There really is nothing like it.
Yeah, absolutely. The what's the thing I'm looking for? The immersion aspect.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's kind of like when this is going to be a really random example, but there's a newer game. And I think it's called Y2K, but I watched the Only Plays guys play it, and they called it Yik. So that's all I could think of its name as.
Mm-hmm.
It has a point in the story to where it's like, oh, we have some time to kill. Before we can go on, we have to get to level 5. And it's like, that's super lame. Like, why are you the character telling me? You shouldn't be aware of your levels.
Exactly, yeah.
It's kind of like it's one of the reasons I'm not a huge fan of Chosen One type stories, because come on, you already know the main character has plot armor. You know there's 18 books after this one. Why do you have to just spell it out to me that he can't die?
Now, kind of speaking back to the emotional interaction that we have with role-playing, the only thing that really comes close to it in my opinion, is music. There's something very direct about the emotional appeal of music, where a song that's really good, really moving, or really meaningful to a specific individual, it almost doesn't matter what song it is, if it has that meaning for you, there is this resonance that you feel kind of in your core as you listen to that song. I think we've all had the experience of listening to a particular piece of music and you can feel like your arm hair stand up. That it's a very, very similar experience in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I remember one of the most, how would I put this? One of the most emotionally validating, I'm going to use that word, moments that I've ever had on my own was, again, as an emotional teenager, just broken up with a girlfriend, listening to the Rise Against song, Audience of One, mm-hmm. and has a part in the second verse that says, I brought down the sky for you, but all you did was shrug. And, you know, teenage me was like, yeah, exactly. I brought down the sky for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, if you hit something in the appropriate, like, time frame and coincide it with, you know, things that actually happened in your life, like, it never leaves you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the RPGs also have that sort of power. I've got a buddy who's also super into Coheed. That's actually kind of how we met. We were just hanging out at a comic shop, both wearing Coheed jerseys. And to this day, he still loves the Good Apollo album because he got into them as he was divorcing his first wife. Mm-hmm. He's like, nothing will ever top it. I love this shit. Songs about crucifying a girl who was mean to you. Yes.
But no, I mean, another aspect where music and role playing, I feel like, intersect, and you know, this is something I talk about a lot. But listening to music is one thing; experiencing it live is another. It's the same with role playing. I feel like there really is a key difference in, you know, what you can feel from a song or a role-playing game when you're experiencing it in the same building, in the vicinity, you know, live there in the moment, that you can't get just from listening or from any kind of like removed role-playing, like, you know, role-playing online. The only other like third thing I know to compare it to is watching wrestling live.
I 100% agree. I recently went to watch the Smashing Pumpkins live mm-hmm. with my fiance, who's super not into like rock music at all. She's more of a Megan Thee Stallion kind of girl. and she, you know, I like tried to like prep her and like let her listen to all of the hits and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, it's fine, but I don't get it. You know, like, why would you listen to a song? Like, why would you listen to a bunch of songs about a now 50, 60 year old man just being sad? And we went and saw them live, and afterwards she was like, you know, I get it now. And like, now I'll hear her listening to Smashing Pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
Just the sheer raw like emotional transfer, I guess, you mm-hmm. know, the way the musicians can deliver things and deliver feelings is it's great. There's a band called Narco Debut, and they have a song called Governor Switch, and it's standard, like, you know, girlfriend stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second verse is the line that's like, let's you've telling me how God changed you, well, yeah, I guess shame on me. And he says it so like dejectedly and like so like annoyed
mm-hmm.
that it's just like, oh, okay, so that's what this guy's, you know, he's just being annoyed. He's annoyed and he's tired.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, like, one live experience that I had that kind of ties back into songs that have inspired our role-playing. My first experience with the song The Anarchist from Rush's Clockwork Angels album was hearing them play it live at R40. I had not listened to Clockwork Angels before I went to that tour, and they opened the show with it. And so it's the song I'm completely unfamiliar with, but just it hits. That song hits so hard. It has like this great building intro. The drums are super loud on the opening. It has this driving riff behind it. The dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan. And as soon as they started it, I was just like, whoa. I mean, like the curtain dropped and, you know, they're the guys standing there in front of me. It was the first time I'd ever seen them in person. And it was the first time I heard the song. And it just like, every time I hear that song, I'm right back there in Greensboro, North Carolina, at the Greensboro Coliseum, seeing Rush for the first time. When that curtain drops and they're standing there in front of me, I almost can't believe like they're actual people there in front of me. But then, you know, that song, it's again like a perfect encapsulation of adolescent anger. It's one of those songs.
Oh, yeah.
And just any, I feel it all throughout like my Night Haven setting that I'm running. I just hear that song playing in the background of so many scenes that I'm setting up for players, so many like scenarios that I write for the adventures I'm working on right now. That's kind of like the heartbeat of that setting for me right now is that song, The Anarchist.
I feel what you mean by the these are people here. Like,
yeah.
Remember the first time seeing Cody and Cambria live? It was at a smaller place, Mercury Ballroom in Louisville, Kentucky. Only thing worth going to in Louisville, by the way. Don't go there. It sucks. Just being amongst a mass of people, and I've always had really good experience with Cody and Cambria concerts. Like, I go by myself, and just everyone's super cool. I actually have a video, and in it, you get of them playing In Keeping Secrets. And there's a part in the song which goes, "Man, your own jackhammer," and like it's like gang vocals that they have the crowd do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so cool just being a mass of people, the music stopping suddenly, and then, "Man, your own jackhammer." such a super cool experience. I know a band I've been listening to for my cyberpunk stuff is actually The Midnight, like a poppy synthwave kind of band. And I like that they have like guitar solos and stuff because I'm a really big fan of the rock song structure.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of synthwave for me kind of falls a little flat because it will just go into like synth oscillations.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's like, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of hearing like, womp, 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 but a very much a kickback to old, I think Crafty mentioned like John Carpenter, that kind of like soundscape.
Yep.
But yeah, for the most part, I am kind of like you. I kind of stick to like the rock stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look at playlists to think of. I can think of so many like random bands. Mastodon, awesome band, great for RPG stuff.
Now one thing I want to say before we are kind of running up against our time here, but there is one thing I want to say because you mentioned going to Coheed and Cambria concerts alone. I want everyone out there to know it is not just okay, but I would actually encourage you to go to concerts by yourself. If it's a band that you like and, you know, no one else that you know really likes, go to that concert by yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the, it's bad enough I sing karaoke. Hey, man, when everyone at the concert is deaf, it doesn't matter what you sound like.
Mm-hmm.
In that video I mentioned, my voice is like all cracking and stuff because I usually don't yell.
Mm-hmm.
I sound like I'm 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, go to concerts by yourself and just like just talk to people.
Yeah.
People are, you know, super cool. They're there to be social. Especially if you drink, get a couple beers in you, and then just go talk to random dudes.
Yeah, and I mean, people worry about like being alone. It's not like going to a movie by yourself, which I also think is not a sin. I go to movies by myself whenever I can, just because then I get to see whatever I want to see. But when you're at a concert, you are among people who are there to see the same thing that you're there to see. So you're not alone. You're with like-minded people. And you also don't have to worry. Like if you drag along like a significant other who's not into the band, you don't have to worry that like your weirdness is going to seem weird to them. You can just kind of let your freak flag fly.
Yeah, I've met super interesting people at a concert. I met a dude who was like 6'8", and he was an accountant. He just moved back to the U.S. from India. He was telling me stories of how the monkeys hated his wife because like the place they were at had like wild monkeys running around. Mm-hmm. They would always like beat up his wife. That's how they moved back. He was like, man, I'm a big dude, but they run in like packs of 50. There's only so many monkeys I can fight. I met a dude who had like just gotten out of the military. He told me a bunch of cool stories from Afghanistan. I joined this group when I was going to see the Deer Hunter in Between the Bear to Me. I joined this like group of chicks, which after the, like the initial like trying to fight me off because they were like, no, we don't want to bang you. And I'm like, I don't want to bang you either. I'm just trying to make conversation. After getting out of that weirdness, it was a fun time. I unfortunately had to be their like guard between like the small 5-foot woman I was hanging with and like the Viking dudes in the pit. So I was scared.
Yeah, Cal, I don't know what's going on there as far as the numbers go. But you know, it doesn't matter because we're talking about music and we're having a good time here.
Yeah. Ryan is trying to keep me on topic.
But no, I've had several interesting experiences at concerts. I went to a Bare Naked Ladies concert by myself, and some woman who is probably a good 20 years older than me, I think, was trying to hit on me. I don't know, but it was kind of weird, but also like kind of funny and fun at the same time. It was an interesting experience. You know, I've been in a lot of like situations where at concerts where I'm just like, I don't know what's about to happen here. There's some weirdness going on. At that same Flogging Molly concert where I also saw Coheed and Cambria, I was 16 years old and like a bunch of drunk dudes were like, we're gonna like dance in a line together, and included me and my other teenage friend. And I was just like, hey, we're not drunk, but all these guys are. So
come join our conga line.
Yeah. We're gonna have fun here.
If I'm like interacting with like people older than me, I tend to get like adopted, especially at concerts. I think it's just because I look like I'm lost constantly. I was at Ichthus in Kentucky. If you don't know what Ichthus is, for people in chat, it's a Christian Woodstock. I was like, you know, 16, and I got separated from my group. And it was like 110 degrees out, humid, it's awful. And we were trying to leave, and I got separated. And this family was like dressed to the nines, like, you know, nice button up, tucked in, slacks. Mm-hmm. And this takes place in a field, so I'm like, this just seems ill-advised. And they said, hey, buddy, are you lost? And at this point, I was like, yeah. Like 16, turning 17, they're like, all right, buddy, let's go find your family. So, like, they just adopt me, and, like, they start looking. And it's, like, me, the husband, the wife, and they're, like, four children. Looking super out of place, and they're, like, walking me across the parking lot, like, pointing at random vans, like, is that yours? We eventually, you know, got back together with my group, but. And we're like, who are those guys? And I'm like, I have no idea.
It sounds like you just got adopted by a horde of wandering Mennonites.
Yeah, I guess. what was the kind of on topic? What's the weirdest show you've been to? Like, you know, combination of musicians or just something weird happened?
I think for me, the weirdest show I've ever been to, and these are all nobody bands. No one has ever heard of these bands because one of them had like one of my coworkers in them. But I was at this show in a bar called the Cobra here in Nashville. And the Cobra is a fantastic bar. Anyone who's in town, you need to go there. It's like when you think of a bar from the movies, this is the bar that you think of. It's seedy as hell. You can smoke in there still. It's great. But I was at this bar seeing a band that one of my coworkers was in called Waterfall Wash. And then there was this other band called the Founding Fathers. And their opener was a band called, I believe, Big Gorgeous.
Already sounded wonderful.
And Big Gorgeous was a duo. It was this giant, like 6'5" dude with long hair and a beard who was wearing basically a demon costume, and he played guitar and sang. And then his buddy had this like duster on the whole time, and one of those hats that Pharrell used to wear, like the Dudley Do-Right hat.
Like the sun hat or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, the art ho hat. Okay.
Yeah. And like they just, all of their songs were so weird, and they were weird. And they had this girl who like came out in a dominatrix outfit for one of their songs. She wasn't a musician or anything. She was just like part of the show. And I had just started this job like 2 weeks before. I had just met this coworker one day before, and I'm standing in this bar in Nashville, which I've only lived in for like 3 months at this point. And I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on. I've had three drinks. I'm completely like out in space somewhere. I don't even know that these are other humans that I'm standing around watching this like garbage tier indie rock band that's doing all this weird stuff.
You were like, did somebody spike my drink? What's going on?
And my coworker was standing next to me, and he's just like, he kept looking at me like, I have no idea what's going on either.
What a wonderful intro.
Yeah. And my coworker's band was fine. They were good. It's Nashville. You can't like get away with being a crappy musician here. Every local band is good to some degree, but This random band was just the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. And they unsolicitedly like handed me a copy of their CD. And I was just like, I'm never going to listen to this. You realize this. Me experiencing your music was a one-time thing.
I'd have kept it just for the weird value.
Well, I threw it away because I didn't want anyone to know that I had that in my possession.
You were like, possession's 9/10 of the law. I won't ever do this. I think the weirdest combination I've ever seen, you know the pop musician Lorde?
Yeah.
I saw her tour with Run the Jewels.
What?
Yeah. It was super weird. So Run the Jewels opened for her. And, like, I went to go see Run the Jewels, which Lorde puts on a great show, by the way. I would actually go see her again, even though I don't listen to her music. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they came out, and, like, it's just a bunch of dudes like me, just mid-20s dudes, and then, like, 15-year-old girls. So Run the Jewels comes out, and the first thing they say is, now, there's a lot of children and a lot of parents in the room, and just so you know, your kids want to hear a lot of cursing. But if they're going to learn the curse, they may as well learn for the best. Let's run these motherfucking jewels. That was probably the weirdest combination I've ever seen. I've never seen anything close to that in terms of like, what kind of overlap was there?
Yeah. How, like, do they share a label? How did that even come about?
I don't know, because as far as I'm aware, Run the Jewels is like their own thing. Like, they're independent. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a label. So I like to think it's like Lord was just a big fan. Was like, hey, come tour with us. Come tour with me. Yeah, I also got to see Polyphia with Coheed once. That was pretty sick.
Yeah.
I think the funniest thing that's happened to me, you know the metal band, the Christian metal band, For Today?
Yeah.
The lead singer laughed at me because I got punched in the face in a mosh pit because it was right in front of him, and he stopped singing and was like covering his mouth, like trying to not let me see he was laughing. That was fun.
Another kind of interesting thing that happened to me, this was right after Neil Peart died. There was a tribute show that happened in Nashville, and just a whole bunch of local artists got together. A couple people from some like Rush tribute bands that I am friends with were at the show. So I go there, and it's me and one of my gaming friends. And at the beginning of the show, people just like kind of, they were into it, but not into it. And so there was this big space in front of the stage where no one wanted to stand. And so me and him just go stand there. And we just start like rocking out and having a great time. And people start filling in behind us. But we essentially started like the mildest pit ever at a Rush tribute show. And people kept calling me out because I was singing along with every single song, because it's Rush, and Rush is my favorite band of all time. So
Rush is awesome.
Like, we're going to sing Limelight. We're going to sing Marathon.
Did they do Roll the Bone?
Oh, yeah, they did Roll the Bones. You know that's where my show's name came from, right?
I was going to make that joke. I didn't know. I didn't think it was actually, like, true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's called Rolling Bones.
Man, I remember when I first heard that song, like, the rap part caught me so off guard.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he does it an octave lower than anything else.
Yep.
That was still a good song, though. I don't care what anyone says. Great.
Yep.
Yeah, last time I was in Nashville, I saw this band called The Whistles and the Bells.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely fantastic. It's the lead singer is like one of the dudes from Cadillac Sky, which is like a bluegrass band, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Super good show. I don't know if they still do tours or whatever, because they haven't released music in a while.
Mm-hmm.
The last song they released was like a song about praying for Kanye, because it was the first time he was going crazy a few years ago. Well, I guess not the first time, but one of the times.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you're a wrestling fan. How, like, deep into TNA Impact have you ever gotten?
Oh, man. So I watched it as a kid, maybe 2004 to, like, right before Hulk Hogan showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to see a lot of the fun Russo stuff. They got him kicked off Spike. The reverse battle royale.
Yep.
I think one of the most horrifying things I saw was that women's ladder match. Yes, Victor, exactly.
That's the whole joke of the name. It's, it technically stands for Total Nonstop Action, but it's called that because of TNA. Yeah.
Also, the first couple of shows, they had strippers and had them just go and quote-unquote wrestle.
Pretty much.
Because Jeff Jarrett was like, yeah, this will draw dimes, baby.
Do you remember from those early days of Impact, do you remember Goldilocks?
Oh, man.
The interviewer.
No, not off the top of my head.
So she was, I think she was a manager on TV for a while, and at one point she was like Abyss's manager, and she had a whole stable, but she was also a backstage interviewer. She's also a musician, and she was one of the singers at that Rush show that I went to.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. That is super sick.
So it's just like, we're here at this Rush tribute show, and that's Goldilocks from TNA.
You were like the only guy there. Like, actually, I don't know. Nashville's a pretty big wrestling place, so maybe multiple people were like, oh, Goldilocks. I met Jay Lethal once because I accidentally walked backstage at a show. It was at his he's got a wrestling school here in Tampa, and I went to go watch a show. Great show. And I went through the wrong door because they were holding it at like a fairground. And I was like, there's a bunch of wrestlers back here. I think I'm at the wrong place. And as I'm turning to leave, Jay Lethal walks up and asks me where the water is, because I guess he thought I worked there. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I just came through the wrong door. And he's like, oh, okay, no problem. But hey, you know, if you're not busy afterwards, I can sign some stuff or whatever you want me to do. It's just I'm a little busy right now. I'm like, no, dude, totally get it. You know, have a good show. See you later. He's like, yeah, man, thanks for coming. Super nice dude.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, unfortunately, I feel like I could keep going now that we're talking about wrestling. But
we'll get on tangents.
We are kind of up against our time, and there is one more question that I have to have you answer before we go here. The answer can be as philosophical or as sophomoric as you want it to be. But John, if you could put anything on a t-shirt, what would it be?
Oh man, anything on a t-shirt. Well, you know, the answer's got to be the Rolling Bones logo coming at you next week from Teespring. man, that's a really hard one. Hmm. Honestly, I think the Dungeon Crawl Classics cover, if I could get that on T-shirt, that would be sick.
Like one of the Doug Kovacs ones?
Yeah. The DCC stuff is super sick art. I want to get a Hyperborea shirt too. I've not played the game yet, but it's got such a sick art style.
Yep. I think Jeff sells it. It's kind of like a black metalified version of the Hyperborea logo, but he does sell t-shirts.
Yeah, he does. I see Daniel from Bandit's Keep wearing a lot of like the comic book style ones.
Mm-hmm.
Looks sick. And good art and logo design will take you very far. Absolutely. That's why I'm not very far, because I did all mine.
All right. Well, unfortunately, that's going to be it for tonight. But thank you so much for coming on. This was a blast, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, man. You know, this is the first time I've done any of these you know, kind of stream things, and it was a fun time.
And if we ever have a actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and say at some point we'll do a wrestling episode. We'll do a wrestling episode. And I'll bring you on, and I think Hambone should probably come on as well, because he and I have done a wrestling episode before, so definitely we'll come back to talk about wrestling at some point.
That will be sick. I will watch a bunch of old school wrestling in anticipation of that.
All right, well, guys, that's going to be it for Rolling Bones this week. Next week, not only will I be on Natural Ones with the Basic Expert and Victor Gorchev, but Legacy Game Mastering will be returning next week, and we are going to be talking about gatekeeping. The good, the bad, the ugly, all aspects of gatekeeping. We'll be discussing that next week here on Rollin' Bones with Legacy Game Mastering. But until then, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I am so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I will see you guys next time.